Take it away.
Take it away. I'm not sure where I'm going to take it to, but we'll see what happens.
Do you mind if I do a little bit of a video?
Yeah, no, go for it. No problem.
I'm going to videotape Selena speak because there was people that could make it today. They were really wanting to hear what Selena wants to say.
Thank you.
I will share it either on the Facebook group or I'll send the video privately to people so it won't be all over the place.
Okay.
Awesome.
Okay, I don't want to stand behind people, so I'm going to stay over here. Because that's just weirds me out a little bit. So in terms of the topic, I call this How to Lead with Love in Challenging Times. Around the time that they asked me if I would speak, Donald Trump was just elected, and I was seeing a lot of things from people online about, oh my God, and people started freaking out, even in Canada. And I'm like, okay, well, you can't step into fear and anger and all that stuff. Like, that isn't going to solve anything. But how do we really step into a love-based way of living and leading in our organizations or in our communities? A lot of the work that I do now is really exclusively around leadership. So when I'm speaking on stages from, you know, like a small group like this to my largest was 1,200 people in October, I was talking about leadership in organizations and how the core of this is not all of the ways that we've been taught in organizations and how to show up and lead. I remember being 23 and being told that you can't be friends with your staff because then you can't make hard decisions about what to do with people. And I kind of feebly raised my hand and said, I don't think that's true, because my experience had been, even in 2 years of leading teams, that actually really caring about my staff and being friends with them and, you know, really finding connection points was really very beneficial. We had really high performing teams because people were happy. They felt nurtured, cared for, respected, and that made all the difference. So I talk a lot about that now, whether I'm speaking to leaders or to people who work on teams, that this is the way to go. So that said, I can't jump directly into, you just need to love people, because when I'm talking to people who work in corporations, they're like, you can't love people at work. You can't love in business. Like, it doesn't work that way unless you're an entrepreneur, and then you might actually be able to show up and love people, right? So I lead people through a space of self-discovery to help them to uncover what are their blocks to showing up with love. I actually launched a program in the last month. It started, it's called Love to Lead, and it actually takes leaders who really want to cultivate these really, whether it's their community or their organization or their businesses, into a space of love in their organization. And they thought I was going to take them right there. They did not know that I was going to take them through a process of self-discovery. So I want to share with you some of the highlights of that process of self-discovery, because I think these are the things that really make the difference. If you can't jump right into love, it's because we have blocks in the way, right? So this might cross over to some of the things that you talk about and work on. A lot of the foundation for me comes from many, many, many years of interest in self-development, professional development, but also the space of soul and spirit. A lot of my studies into shamanism as well, but everything actually bridges together. So like what you were saying, like in the last years, things are just fitting together. Now I understand why this broad spectrum of things that I've been led to do and have been interested in, now it all is fitting together perfectly into this beautiful container where it can support people through massive, rapid transformation. So my first question for you is, what do you feel really challenged by right now? Like, really challenged by? Is there an event or a conversation that's really caused you to feel really frustrated or scared in any way? Because that's something that's really important to work with. So I would actually open that up for one or two people to share as to what's happened recently that you feel really like, oh my God, this is really pissing me off. Yeah.
Describing what I'm about to do or trying to do to people who are not in this room.
Okay. So
people who don't think like this.
Okay, so what happens for you? How do you feel?
It's a challenge because, you know, they're not on the same wavelength. They're thinking the way I used to think. So I understand where they're coming from, and I understand where this doubt is coming from, where this skepticism is coming from. And I also, you know, I try to keep in mind, like, they're just, they're trying to be helpful. And at the core, they care about me, which is why they're being skeptical. But, you know, it still naturally doesn't feel good. It doesn't.
Sure. So like, how do you feel? Tell me a feeling.
Okay.
That you have with it. So you're challenged, but what is the feeling?
Defensive. Defensiveness. A little vulnerability. Self-consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say those are like the big ones.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you deal with defensiveness, if you're in that space, do you feel capable of shifting into just loving them exactly as they are, despite their reservations about what you're sharing?
Yeah, when I consciously remind myself.
Yeah. So how do you do that?
It's just effort. It's. I mean, I've made it a practice for a while now, like, not to take too many things personally.
Yeah.
Because. And, you know, oftentimes, if anyone's being nasty to you, it's more a reflection of them and where they are than their actual assessment of you. So
absolutely.
I've come to learn that.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, people who are close to me and care, like, I know that it's out of love where they're coming from. They're not trying to attack. They're not trying to put me down or put down in my head.
Yeah.
Like, they care about me, they want me to be okay, which is why they're...
Sure, so you understand what's going on there, but you still feel defensive.
Yeah, I mean, it's the natural
gut
thing. I'd be lying if I said it didn't.
Yeah, and that's okay. Like, these are real feelings that we have, right? And so the first step is always honoring our feelings, and honoring that they're valid and they're true, and it's okay that we feel that the way that we feel, right? So, the process that I lead people through, I mean, it's a long, lengthy process. It goes very, very deep with them, but... it helps to surface all of the feelings and to recognize them, to call them out. And that's always the first step. If you feel really challenged with people, you feel angry, defensive, hurt, frustrated, all of those things. And Trump, I know, solicited a lot of anger from people. Like, how do we show up with love in that environment? How do we show up in love to people if you don't align with Donald Trump? How do you show up in love to people who voted for him? How do you show up and love him if you don't align with him? Right? And that's a very extreme example. But how do we do that when there's so many things that don't resonate for us, that just feels really, really wrong for us? I went into a meditation after that happened, after I found out about it. I was like, oh no. I went into meditation, and it was very, very clear, very, very quickly. The information that I got was just very clear. It said, this is what you're here for. Is to help people to shift back into love again so that we can lead in that way. But there's a process involved to do that. It would be lovely that we could just leap right into love right away to let go of all of those feelings that are getting us stuck. But we're human beings, and as human beings, our emotions get stored in our body, and they will be triggered and replayed until we acknowledge them and feel them and let them go again. And there's different ways to do that. One of the first ways is that acknowledgement and noticing how we feel in our body and choosing to love ourselves despite that we feel a way that we don't want to feel. That's always the first one. You can't extend love to somebody else unless you really have love for yourself, even in the emotions that you don't like. So that's always where I start with people. When I was a child, I spent a lot of my childhood... I was the oldest of four children. We grew up in government housing on welfare, definitely on the wrong side of the tracks. We didn't have a lot. And the environment that I grew up in is also a very emotionally chaotic household. And I was very quickly, I became very empathic very quickly. And I learned how to give to everybody else and always to show up and love everybody else. Because I could see and feel the pain in other people. The issue with that is, over time, I just got really angry and bitter that nobody was showing up to love me. And that gets stuck in us. If we're not learning how to love ourselves first, we don't really have anything of love to give to other people. And that includes loving all of the hard stuff. It includes loving the things that we don't love about ourselves, but also the emotions that we don't like. I remember one time a couple of years ago, one of my sisters got really angry with me. I won't go into the story, but she basically was yelling at me, and I was very calm. I was like, I don't know what's going on, but she's like, I know, you're angry right now, and you won't express it. Why won't you get angry? And I'm like, I don't get angry. What are you talking about? And I spent my life not being angry. Because I didn't believe it was a valid emotion. And not loving anger in myself meant that I could not respect and love anger in other people. Right? So that awareness is key, and then the next step is acknowledgement, and then choosing to honor and love that emotion is critical. If you can't do that, you can't do it for another person. I've had my share of experiences where I expected somebody else to show up that way for me, and they couldn't, because they couldn't do it for themselves either. Has anyone else experienced that? At all?
What was the last part you just said?
Where I expected someone to show up a certain way with me, to honor and love like me being really hurt, let's say. I had a really challenging breakup a year ago, which triggered some trauma in myself, and the people that I expected to be there for me could not be there for me. But they couldn't deal with my emotions because they couldn't deal with their own emotions that were the same. Right? They had no capacity to extend something that they didn't love about themselves yet. So now, in my space, because of the healing work I've done on that, I can hold space for other people in similar levels of trauma triggers and just love them unconditionally, and without getting wrapped up in their stories, without taking on their emotions. Right? So there's a lot of different challenges that we can encounter, and the key is always to just honor and love what's coming up and surfacing. The next step from there is to understand what are we afraid of happening, right? So we can honor and love those things, but if we are in fear of a consequence to happen, then we're going to get stuck again and we can't shift. So in terms of fear, what is the worst thing that can happen? And we go through the same process to uncover what could be the worst thing that could happen? And really go big. Go really, really big and feel it. And really feel and own what those stories are. And there's a process that you can go through to help to shift those things. But one of the major things is to just step into a space of gratitude and appreciation. And say, again, I honor that this has come up. And what can I appreciate about the situation, the opportunity for my learning and the growth? But also, what can I appreciate about the other person or the other people in the situation? To come back into a space of a little glimmer of love. You know, if you have a practice of gratitude, does anybody have a practice of gratitude here? Yeah. How does that help you to shift? If you're feeling like really off and you're having a bad day, how does that help you? What sorts of things happen for you?
It's a reality check.
Reality check? What else happens?
It puts it into perspective.
Perspective, yeah.
What else? It switches your state to more positive, like seeing the light as opposed to the dark, you know?
Yeah.
It changes your state somehow.
It does. And sometimes you need to find a really long list of gratitudes to shift that state, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's the tiniest things. You can't see a lot of things to be grateful for. It could be as simple as, I'm glad I got to see the sun today. Or, I'm glad that I got to breathe fresh air today. Or I'm glad, maybe it wasn't so that I opened my eyes today, and just finding those little tiny things. All of these practices help to shift our brain connections. It helps to rewire our brains in the very established neural pathways. So when you talk about meditation, gratitude practices, awareness, appreciation for negative emotions, we can feel it in our hearts and our bodies, but we're actually also biologically, we're rewiring those connections, and we're actually rewiring all of the chemicals that are going through our body. So we're switching from cortisol into oxytocin, right? So all of these things actually work together. So the body is connecting to our emotions, which are connecting to our soul and our intention. And it's a beautiful system, and how it works. It's very complex, but it's incredible. We can also support those practices when we're in a fear state or a worry state, or just an anger state. We can shift those chemicals and those processes through support with our nutrition, with our diet. All of those things help too. So I talk about these because it helps to bring us, it supports us to bring us back into love. And if we are cutting some of those things out, then we're going to be left laying flat on the ground just in a ball crying maybe, which I have been in before.
It's a good experience.
You It, you know what? When you go through that, you have a lot more appreciation for all of the awesome stuff that maybe is even just a teeny bit awesome, but it's more awesome than laying in a ball on the floor, you know?
Contrasts.
Yeah, contrasts are important. You know, through despite my childhood, through much of my adult life, I was in a really good space, I thought, but I also wasn't connecting to my feelings. And I wasn't connecting to the hard stuff, which meant I couldn't experience the awesome joy stuff either, which was really fascinating. And it was opening up those boxes to start feeling things, to acknowledge and appreciate those things that led me to being able to have incredible highs of experience and really to feel presence in the moment and to feel true, real, unconditional love for other people. So for me, it was always very easy to unconditionally love other people, except for my family. That was really hard. And I've done a lot of work on that in the last couple of years in particular, to just choose to unconditionally love them regardless of how they show up for me. And part of my process was to actually separate from them, to put them away and to just work on my inner stuff so that I could show up with them that way. It's the same thing in our communities or in our organizations and our companies. You know, if there's a project manager, a director that I just am pissed off around all the time, and it's happened before, like, okay, what is this triggering inside of me? You know, we look at, I connect that into a core wound, is what I tend to do. So I can look at a core emotion that surfaces, but really, what is the core wound that's surfacing? It's something in our past. And it's never about the other person. It's always about something in ourselves, right? So what is that core wound and tying that to a limiting belief that's created and surfaced for us because we've created a rule inside of ourselves that people should behave a certain way or we should behave a certain way, and that gets us stuck. So we unwind those things with practices like appreciation, meditation, and mindfulness are helpful for that. So once we've like done the work on that hard stuff, that helps us to shift really fundamentally into a space of being really present and playful in the moment. That's the next practice I call in. How can I be more curious or playful? Because with play comes joy, and with joy follows love very easily. And that connects us into a space of deeper connection with self, and true appreciation of ourselves as authentic, unique individuals. There's a lot of practices I could throw in there, but I'll just say playfulness and presence are really key, which then leads into a space of ultimate non-attachment and surrender, which is the most beautiful thing, yeah.
How would you say, practice? How do you practice playfulness?
Playful? I actually have a new mantra. Because I spent a lot of this last year like having incredible joy and beautiful things happening, where I was invited to speak all around the world, which was incredible, and awesome highs, but also in this space of inner turmoil all the time. And someone said to me, one of my coaches, they said, you know, you've done the work, you're good, it's time to play. Like, no, there's always more work to do. Like, no, it's time to play. So I installed a new mantra. I'm like, how can I make this more playful? Right in this moment, how can I have more fun? And so I just built a practice of, like, the gratitude practice, pretty well established. Right? But it was still, like, it was sort of fun, but it was still, like, serious recognition of gratitude rather than just being dorky and playful and fun. Right? I was a very quiet, serious child and adult. Uber responsible at a very young age, so I did not actually spend a lot of time playing as a child. I didn't have the opportunity to. So for me, like having a conscious practice of playfulness and to say, you know what, I'm bored, I'm not having fun, I'm checking out, I'm defensive, or I'm angry or frustrated, whatever it happens to be, like, ooh, how can I have more play right now? Right? And I'm like, ooh, there is opportunity to play, even though I'm teaching this really boring class. Right? How can I make it more fun? How can I play more? And installing a practice of playfulness reminds me of who I am and what lights me up. That helps me to be more authentic and transparent with other people. So that's the next level that I recommend with people. And then bringing it into a space of surrender, where we surrender to what is happening in the moment.
This is so good. I don't want to go, but I got to go.
Sorry. I got to meet somebody. But it's so nice to meet everybody.
I guess
you're videoing it anyway, so I'm good. But I think we can have a lot of conversation on this topic. Especially the family part.
See
you soon, everybody.
Thanks for having me. So that surrender piece, that's the next step of, like, all the way through their space that's happening, right? But this is like the ultimate surrender, where regardless of what's happening around you, regardless of what people are doing or saying, we just accept it. We're like, oh, well, this is interesting. I wonder what's going to happen next. You know, and having fun with that. And for me, this is the ultimate connection to soul and to spirit, to trust the flow, and just to trust the flow, that it's taking me somewhere very interesting and fun and unique, which is very supportive in stepping into love. Because I could have Marla, which I know she would never do, could just get really angry with me and yell at me and attack me on something that I did wrong from her perspective, right? And I could be like, huh, tell me more about that. How did that make you feel? Or sorry, okay, well, thanks for letting me know. And I'm good, right? But if we have an attachment to things, it's because we've been triggered by something and we've not worked that through yet. We haven't acknowledged it, felt it, and then allowed it to start to release. And we haven't given ourselves that space to do that. So in order to lead with love in challenging times or not, we have to do that inner work. I've been in a very intense journey the last almost 4 years, doing a lot of inner work. A lot of the stories that I've heard here, whether it's work or personal life, I deeply resonate with all of them, because my path has been radically shifted of my own choosing in the last 4 years as a result, to start doing my inner work and to do the clearing work. But it's because of that journey that I can actually support others in doing the same sorts of things. So I can work with leaders in organizations, and helping them do that. If I'm even in on-site with the clients, they don't know that I'm doing that with them, but it's happening. And then they magically show up more radiant, and they show up more loving, and they show up more leading by example in terms of kindness and caring and respect, and also openness to hearing what needs to happen for the team, the people that they're leading. I've had radical transformations for departments in a span of 3 months, going from people are miserable, refuse to like show up at release parties, out of a department of 40, maybe 5 people did just before I got there. This is an awesome example. And 3 months later, the entire department showed up, and this is after hours on their own time. And used smiles as a metric for how well we are proceeding in terms of shifting into love again. And really, once you do the inner work, you can show up with other people that way and hold space for them in a similar fashion, where you can witness their emotions and their feelings, their triggers, hear their stories, hear their fears. Just allow it to come out and hold space for them. And when we hold space for other people to surface what they've been holding inside, it's like holding the darkness inside, holding the shadow inside. We bring it up to the light. And when we bring it up to the light, there's space for it to heal. And usually just that space to just to hold that, just to hear it, is enough for people to let go of all of that crap that they've been holding on to and being open again to trying a new path or to trying a new way, which is really cool, very magical. I also do that with women separately. I've had the opportunity to mentor a lot of women in my field. They've asked for that, which has been really cool. But I also have another side project that's been kind of slow moving, but I've had to do more work on myself to keep it moving ahead, which was, it's a book on shame with women and all different types of shame, and women sharing their stories of healing through shame, whether it's from sexual trauma or from just body image issues or whatever else it is for them. And it's the same sort of process of going through all of these things is what it's taken for people to step into feeling whole and healed in the world again. So it's part of my work here to hold space to help women to love themselves again, or men even, who are just harboring all of this dark emotions and energies, and not loving themselves, to learn how to love themselves again, so they can put their radiant beauty and their gifts back into the world from a space of love. So one of the things that I ask people now when they're triggered by something, and I keep using Trump as an example because it's happened for so many people, these beautiful, love and light-filled people that I know have sunk into anger, deep anger and hatred, right? And I'm like, oh my God, you know, what is coming up for them? What has happened in their life before that this is triggering? And supporting them through that process to release that stuff so they can step back into the leadership space from a space of care and love, because that's who they've chosen to be here. And the opportunity with the triggers is always to say, oh my gosh, there's opportunity to shift even further into who I am and who I can be, which is pretty awesome. So I am personally really grateful now for my journey with all of the incredible pain and the crazy navigating pathways, because without that stuff, I can't do the work that I do now. I would not be able to, like right now, I'm working with leaders in 4 different countries in my program online. And it's incredible, like, what these people are doing. And they're trusting me to take them on this path that's very, very personal and very sacred. They did not know that they were signing up for that, but they're jumping right in, and it's amazing, and it's beautiful. To speaking on these stages and then navigating, you know, hundreds of people through a deep introspective process and or a meditation, you know, and supporting them through from where they are at. So if people are in a space of really just being present with, they like mind, they like logic and analysis, meeting them in that space to take them a step further and beyond that, back into some sort of respect of love for themselves. And helping to uncover just one little thing that's getting in their way. This notion of unconditional love. Has anyone really felt that? I'm curious to know. What does unconditional love really feel like? If you tune into your body, what does it feel like? What happens? Pardon? Can you tell me more about that? Try to get specific.
It's like a safety net. You know, no matter what, you're falling into safety. No matter what.
No matter what, yeah?
Or like trust, I guess, faith.
Trust.
Word.
Yeah.
Something.
What else happens?
You mean giving or receiving?
Either. Which one feels relevant for you to share right now?
Like my nephew and my niece, I love them to death.
Yeah.
Like when my nephew first came, it was like the first, like legit, the first time I said, like, I would die for that kid.
Yeah.
And I've never felt that strong, like, kind of an emotion for. So, but that's kind of what it was for me.
Cool. Yeah, it's this intense safety net. Yeah. This intense safety net. What you're causing.
Everything else is
going
to
have to be.
Okay, we're good. So, intense safety net to do whatever and still be loved. To be whoever and still be loved. To say whatever and still be loved. And how often have you really felt that deeply? And I'm going to use the example of, I would never ever do this, but I could kill somebody and I would still be loved by somebody else, deeply loved. Is it really to that level? Like, I would never kill somebody else, right? But would you still really love that person if you were, if you did, right? That's what unconditional love really is. There's nothing that you can do that's going to halt that love.
Forgiveness.
It's incredible forgiveness, yeah. I went to, I've done a lot of different things. This year I was in Belgium in September in Brussels, and I saw the Dalai Lama speak for 2.5 days, and it's incredible. And all these different people from different industries are sharing different things about power and care, talking about leadership and love, and from all the different perspectives and industries. And really, that's what it comes down to. When I picture who I might want to embody, Dalai Lama is one of those people, because regardless of what has happened and how he feels slighted he still loves the people who've oppressed him as people.
Of course.
Of course. So I'm like, I'm not perfect. I don't feel that way. I still have things that I'm working through that I need to let go of. Right? But I know that at least in the space of the work that I do, regardless of what other people are going to say, or even my family now, regardless of what's going on or what's going to happen, I can still just show up and love them without reservation, without holding back, without limits, without expectation, and them behaving differently than me, because I love them exactly as they are, even if it means that they don't know how to love me. Right? And I would say I've done a lot of really hard work on this. It's taken several years. Yeah.
I just need something special. If you go in an alternate path in life, you're doing something, and then you're sharing it, especially with family and so forth, because they don't believe in your values, and they think you're stupid, and they say it, they worry, yes. They
don't try to change it.
Whatever. But is it really smart to share it to me?
Yeah,
right,
so,
exactly when you start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
I've
learned
that
hard
way. You don't know where it's going, and it's unstable, and they're always asking me questions.
Yeah.
Oh, what's going on? You're so I find, like, I don't mean.
Yeah, so I
think share as less as possible. Tell them they're over the thing.
So I'm not saying you need to share with you. I don't think I said that at all. But
no, I'm not saying you. I it's a question I'm asking.
Yeah, so
how much should you share with your loved ones? I mean, their worry is good, but
yeah,
it's also hurting you at the beginning.
Yeah, so I've learned that hard way, from a space of feeling a need for them to love me as I am completely and not respecting where they were at. So I would, you know, be aware of where the other person is at and how their current state will reflect how much you can share with them. That's what I would suggest. So, like, with my one sister, I love her and finally can accept her exactly as she is, and that I can't have meaningful conversations with her at all. I always leave feeling hurt because she can't hold space for that. But she hasn't done her inner healing work yet. And she is just, my conversations surface stuff that she's not willing to feel. Right? So I've learned to not have meaningful conversations. I don't even share my successes with her. I don't share my fears. I don't share anything with her anymore. I have a love for her. I love her enough to know that she can't handle that. Which was really, really hurtful for a very long time for me. But, you know, in doing this inner work, now I can just respect and love her enough to know that that's not where she's at. Right? And it's not a judgment on her. I'm just like, oh, well, I just want to have a relationship with you. That means that I need to respect her current status, her state, and not share more than what she can absorb. Right? And it takes a lot of deep presence and mindfulness to recognize that statement.
Can I add something? Some of the creative projects that I worked on, I had a bunch of friends that were also, it was a kind of a complicated issue where I had friends that were also business partners. So there was, you know, sometimes maybe you want to do something and they don't like it, but it's also creative. So it's like what you like. It's about you, but it's maybe it's also business. So it's hard to differentiate between personal and not personal. And there has been a few instances where I wanted to start something, and I shared that with the people around me, and they were like skeptical about it. They were not okay with it. They're like saying, "Oh no, I don't think it's a good idea." And then maybe out of that, then I wouldn't. It would confuse me even more.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wouldn't do what I wanted to do initially. And then I slowly, in time, then I started, like, without realizing that, I started resenting that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
With, even though, like, at the end, I made a decision of not doing it. Like, nobody forced me to not start that thing that I wanted to start. And for a long time I thought that the problem was them, that they were telling me that they were not. I was like, I started creating this whole narrative in my head that, like, oh, they're not supportive, they're probably not good friends, all that kind of stuff. They were sort of like, they are bad, and they're doing bad things to me. And then it took me a while to realize that it's because I already started without being confident in what I wanted to do. Like, if I started with sort of loving my own idea without... Because basically what I was doing, I was trying to get validation before I even put the hard work into what I was starting. And then it took me a while to realize that it was really not about them. And it was about me from the beginning. So... And then it was interesting how it became the opposite, where they're not bad, and I just appreciate them the way they are, but I don't have to start what I'm doing by telling them. I can just start it by myself, and then at a second stage maybe then start sharing with them, but maybe with a different way of sharing, instead of saying, hey, do you think this is a good idea? I'm more like, this is my idea, this is what I have. What do you think of it now? That it's, like, that it doesn't matter, like, obviously I value that people's opinion, but it just sort of, like, it took me a while to sort of realize what she was saying, that you don't have to necessarily share everything. That doesn't mean that you don't have a good relationship.
The other thing that I heard, without you saying it, is that you chose to love and honor yourself enough to, like, go with what felt right for you.
Right?
And that's something that we often aren't doing very well, is that we are giving all of our power away to other people, and we're not loving ourselves, right? Our ideas, our inspiration, and not to hold on to that. The other thing that you said that triggered something for me, which I think is really helpful, is if you get stuck in they statements, like, they are good friends, there's a few different reframes that you can do, which kind of forces a different response. So let's say we work with, they are good friends to me. One reframe is to turn it around the other way around. So, I am not a good friend to them. And evaluate and consider, how is that true? How am I not being a good friend to them? Another one is to reframe back into yourself. I am not a good friend to myself. How am I not being a good friend to myself? So there's different ways to reframe things to cause us, because what's happening is we're being triggered by their behavior into something deeper that's actually more true for us, which is really powerful. So I've had to go through this process with things, and I find if I get really stuck in a pattern around really not feeling love for somebody else, and I believe that they are doing something to me, or not being respectful to me, or something like that, I stop and like, okay, how is it true that I'm not being respectful to them? How is it true that I'm not being respectful to myself? Those are two ways to reframe that helps to shift it back into a space of appreciation. And realize how we're holding ourselves back really is what it usually comes down to. And someone else is just highlighting that for us. Which is really powerful. So, I'd love to hear from you. I've been talking. I keep talking forever. I talk a lot. I'd love to hear from you guys. It's resonating. Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been listening to your talk. It made me realize that I do have a lot of inner turmoil. A lot of emotions that I'm keeping inside, and I do have a hard time showing, feeling love for other people. I don't know why, even to my own family, I have a hard time feeling like I love them, feeling like I love my, you know, people, women, or what I've been with. So I'm not quite sure how to deal with this, how to deal with the inner turmoil. How to be able to let go of these emotions or let them keep me inside, or just you know, feel joy, as you said. I have a hard time feeling joy sometimes because of all these emotions that I'm taking.
So I can help you with that. There's a process that I take people through that gets the junk out of the way so that you can feel the joy more often. I will share, like, for myself, I'll share a little bit about my own personal story. So, in 2013, at the start of that year, my husband at the time and I, we started counseling. And partway through that year, realized that wasn't helping things a whole lot. We started because, I mean, I did everything right. I was going to do everything right first and be uber responsible, be the child to look up to you, like with my younger siblings. That didn't help them at all, but, you know, and I had the family, I had the career, I had the house, I had everything that you're supposed to strive for, and I still was not happy. And, like, I'm volunteering, and I'm healthy, like, I was fit, I was eating well, I was doing all these things right, but I wasn't very happy, and he wasn't happy. So we started counseling, we started doing work. I was doing the work, he wasn't so much doing the work, he wasn't ready to. Then I finally started going on my own to open up my childhood trauma stuff. And that was a lot of work. I finally started feeling feelings for real. Not just surface level feelings, but I opened up the hard feelings. Which I cried more that year than I had in my 35 years combined. The next year, I thought I would cry less. I actually cried more because there was even more stuff, more emotions. Like, when you repress 35 years of emotions, there was a lot to come out, you know? And then again, last year and this year, even more, because I've had different events happen, different relationships happen, or different trigger events happen that surfaced even more, even deeper root stuff that I thought I had dealt with. It just hit another layer. And for me, it's an energetic thing. For me, it's trauma was stored in my cells. It was stored in the cells of my body, and it needed to be released. Every time something comes up now, I'm just like, oh, more stuff is being released. It's okay. I can handle this. And you can look at it from a biology standpoint. You can look at it from an energetic standpoint, an emotional standpoint, a mental thought process standpoint. I can look at it from every angle because I've done the studies across all of these spectrums. I understand how it works together. I personally love to stay in a space of spirit. I feel happiest there. But I can bring it into all the other levels. So for me, it was to open the door. I had to open the door to go to the thing that scared me the most. And I knew my whole life, when I opened that door, shit was going to happen. And so I avoided it my whole life. I did not want to. And I had to. I thought that I had the life, so I never would have to open that door. Whatever it is for you, everyone has something if you haven't done the work. That's stuck in there that's going to keep triggering you, or you will keep repressing it. So I did it. By the end of that year, I had ended my marriage. I did it at a very inopportune time. I out-earned my husband, except I was homeschooling my son, so I didn't at the time. By the time he moved out, sold the house by 2014 in the summer, I was now living off of my house equity. Thank God I was so diligent about putting money into savings and paying off my house. So at that point, I would have paid it off by the time I was 38. And it was almost $500,000 house, so I was pretty happy about that. Coming from welfare and government housing, that's a pretty big difference, you know? And it was just a process of having to be willing to allow the emotions to rise. Now I've got it pretty well in hand, so I've had a lot of practice. Now when emotions come up and I'm just like, and I feel like I'm gonna get stuck there again, and something will remind me now and say, oh, it's just another lease, it's okay. Allow the feelings, and I say, well, that's interesting. That's my cue, that's the one that I use. So I don't get stuck in the story. Say, oh, that's interesting, and just let it flow on by. That's what works for me now. That said, I spent a lot of this earlier this year, and still, there's some remnant stuck in there, where I feel very much a victim of a circumstance that happened. I recognize it, I'm aware of it, and I also know that it's a trauma connection for me. So I'm doing the work to keep releasing that, so I don't keep living that story. So for you, like, I don't know what your path is going to need to be, but the first step is a willingness to open up whatever your box is. And a willingness to feel some of those feelings. I've had to do a lot of work in reflecting back on my marriage and how we were together, why we were together. It was the right relationship for many reasons for a long time, but as I was changing and growing, it was not anymore. That's one avenue. The other is that because of what I had boxed away, we were the right partners. Once I started opening up the box, it couldn't be the right partners anymore. I was too important. He needed to keep boxes still, right? And for us, I also recognized that, and I still am letting go of guilt around this. Why couldn't I just stay happy together in marriage and family?
family unit doing all of these things right way, right? I couldn't have lived that well. I'm not supposed to live that life, that's the first one. That's not who I really am. I just lived that very, very well. The second piece is the recognition that I would never learn how to love myself just for me in connection with him. And it wasn't about him at all. It was purely about me learning how to love me and to figure out who I am. And without doing that work on that journey, there's no way I could show up in a completely healthy relationship, which I'm still waiting for. But it's, I had to do that work. And I would love to say that, yeah, I could have done it without, but we were together for 16 years. I wasn't doing it without him. He wasn't doing that with me either. And maybe it could have happened, but reality is it's not the path that we chose, and therefore it couldn't happen. Right? And I had to create my own bubble to learn who I really am without connection to other people, because I had built my life on serving the needs of other people. And I had to remove that in order to figure myself out. So it's really fascinating, even now, like I've been, after my marriage, like I went from living in my house with my family, to living in a dorm, to living with friends, to living with my partner for a very long time, to I moved in with my cousin for a year and a half as a transition point because I was homeschooling on paper, I was crap to buy or rent to, I just couldn't, didn't matter how much money I had, I just couldn't do it. And she finally living in my own space with my son part-time. And he's part-time because he deserves both of his parents' support. And it's been a year now. And it's fascinating to me the things that are happening inside. It's crazy because I've always been the uber responsible one that took care of everybody else. Always. I always had everything organized and planned in my marriage and my family unit, my family version. And I am incredibly proud of myself for taking care of me, of having my own house and taking care of my own stuff. Because I've learned how to take care of me, not take care of others and get the benefit from it. You see, there's a difference there, there's a reframe. I was very good at taking care of others and getting the benefit from that. I had no idea how to take care of myself. So on the outside, it was like, oh, Selena's got it all together. And my family unit, my family of origin, was like, yeah, they were proud of me, were jealous of me. That's one of the other. Usually it was jealousy. And when I ended my marriage and moved and all these things happened, a number of people in my extended family and my family of origin were, they just were mad at me. Like, why would you throw your life away? And the reality was, I was choosing to claim my life. Because I was learning how to love myself. Which now I have an immense amount of love to give to other people with no expectations. It doesn't matter anymore how they respond to me, because I'm still gonna love them just as they are. I don't need them to give it back to me anymore. It would be nice, absolutely. But there's no expectation. And if the expectation ever comes up, I just separate myself from them to do my inner work and then come back to that space of intention. So I apply this in context to the organizations I work in. I help leaders step into this space so that they can show up that way, let go of their egos and their power and their needs. Do the inner work to clear that stuff out, why it's there. I do this with women to help them to become into their power, to help to shift the energy of the world, basically. I want to bring balance to the feminine and masculine. Right now, we're way heavily weighted on the masculine side. It's not about men, it's about the energy, right? And that's my purpose here in this life. That's all I'm here to do. So I talk about love. Because it's not just, it's not work. It's, I want to cry when I talk about love, and I feel it. Like, that's how strong it is. It's so powerful. It's so cool. I know how healing it is because I've experienced that really profoundly and deeply. And I truly believe and I know that it can transform organizations and transform individuals. Like, to have that one team that I shared about, the program manager checks in with me still now, like, over almost 2 years later. And He's like, you do not believe what's going on. These people are having so much fun. They love what they're doing. You know, second team doesn't care what's going on with them anymore. They were actually like on a short leash because they thought they were going to hire them. You know, all of these changes have happened. It's incredible. And it's because I showed up to love them. That's all it was. Is to show up to love the people. And people are crazy.
So it's a firefly and they want us to leave the door.
Yeah, it's really stunning over here. Yeah.
So how to lead with love in challenging times? You gotta love yourself first through the inner work to care enough about everything you can do that for the people. And just completely love them, whether it's a teacher, whether it's passion, about anything. And just bear witness to people. And that is incredibly huge and very, very powerful. When I talk about this on stage with, you know, technical people, I use different language, but I will bring up the love word. I talk about it very differently because the way that I talk about it here is not going to resonate with that
great. See how, like,
it's very different.
Different terms. Well, let's see what's happening.
I see what's happening, like, to give you an example of what Selena's talking about, the Standing Rock is, you know, I stand the Standing Rock movement, is a leadership movement from love.
Yeah.
They have a love of life, of the planet, of humanity that, you know, is united, and that is what leadership looks like when it comes from the heart, because they're uniting the world. The world is watching. And the world is rising up with them because it's coming from that. They know the wound, they know that deep wound, but they're choosing to love no matter what and to peacefully protect. Not protest, to protect.
To protect.
Right? And love protects.
Yeah.
Right?
It does.
So,
and I think, like, for me, when I look at. When I look at my child, so I wasn't sure if I would share this, but so I was sexually abused as a child, very, very young, more than once, so more than one person. And how did I survive that? Well, I just chose to love the people who did that. And I had a lot of hard work to do as an adult to clear the wounds, but I've always had love for those people, always. And that's, for a lot of people, sounds really crazy. How can you love somebody who's done that? It's sexually abused as a child. So how do you love someone who's done that? Right? That's a really hard thing. But there was never a question for me. I knew, even as a four-year-old, I knew that there's something that must have happened to that person for them to do that. And I just loved the child in front of that person who was hurting me and who had a meal. That was just built into me. I don't know why. I think it was part of my download into this life, I guess. Right? But that's just there. That's not a question. Now that said, I've had to do a lot of work to reconcile all the stuff that I never allowed myself to feel. Right? But it's part of that showing up to respect and honor the wound and see and respect and honor the wounds in other people. Now when I walk around and I see people believing ways that seem crazy to me or just all I see is a hurt little child. And how can you not but love a little child who's so hurt? You just shrink the person that you see who's doing something that you don't agree with and shrink them into this little tiny child who's been hurt the same way. What I want to do is hug them and love them, right? And it doesn't mean that I'm going to just, you know, turn over for someone who's treating me badly. I've also learned how to have boundaries for myself because I love myself enough to not do that, right? But if you're going to lead with love, you have to find ways to navigate the hurt and all that stuff, right? Just show up that way. And it's important work. So, I've had people ask me the last couple of years, especially, don't you just get tired of doing work? You know, like, you know, some days, yeah, but honestly, I don't have a choice anymore. It comes, and I'm ready. Right? So anytime it comes, I'm ready for it. And I just bring it on. Because I never want to go back to sleep again. Every time I come, I'm like, can I just have my old life back? And I'm like,
Oh no! Life is so much more rich and interesting and vibrant and colorful and meaningful and connecting, like the people that I get to connect with and have meaningful conversations with. I was in Mexico last month on a women's business retreat sort of thing, and there was four different women who shared with me that they had been sexually abused and they had never told anybody. Just my showing up the way that I did, being just a little conversation I had with them, allowed them to start to open up into their own feelings. But I had to love myself enough first to be able to own that, and then love them enough to allow them to witness that. And then they're taking the steps to excuse their own feelings, which is incredible. So,
amazing.
More. I would love to have more to hear from you. Like I said, I could keep talking, but please share. I want to hear what resonates for people.
So a lot of what you talked about is doing work on yourself, and I completely agree. Like, you can't change other people, you can only change yourself and your perspective on your own shit. And then by being yourself, you can inspire other people to want to be a better version of themselves. So what do you have in terms of guidance of being a team member? For example, a dysfunctional team, how do you show up to create integration, to create less hostility? Like, how do you show up? How do you influence other people that aren't interested in being influenced, that are just interested in former years and are retiring and are getting their pension, that I don't talk about anything? Like, how do you show up and encourage, like, change in that, right? Because it's so difficult to be in that every day.
Okay, the first is you're not going to win everybody over.
Yeah.
Some people aren't ready, right? The next is, I just have a lot of one-on-one conversations with people. I just show up, I find connection points in relationships, so we have things in common, and I talk about those things. I build relationship, which leads towards, hey, let's go and chat, let's go get a coffee together. And I start asking questions to be more interested in what's going on for them. And digging my way, not digging, but just conversing my way to, like, what's happening for you? What's bothering you right now? What concerns you? Or what do you think about this idea? What can we do there? And understanding where they're really at, right? And just hearing them. I don't need to course correct them in any way. Mostly it's just about giving them an opportunity to talk about what's really present for them. And through that dialogue, I'm able to help to create a safe container for them where they feel safe to show up and to have a real conversation. And maybe express something that's out of alignment for them, something that's not resonating for them at work, something that they're frustrated by, and just witness that. And then ask, once they've shared it and gotten it out, they're like, do you have any ideas for what you can do differently? Right? But the first step, if I jump right to ideas, there's blocks. Usually there's a lot of defensive blocks, or I'm just turned off and not engaged. Right? So the first step is always to create that container for safety, which requires people to feel safe to open up. So it sounds like it's really time intensive, and it can be. However, it's the fastest way for transformation. That's what I've seen happen.
Hits it right on the head of what you're talking about right now. I don't know if anyone saw this. Last Sunday, the 60 Minutes did a piece on... So if anyone's familiar with Colombia and this decades-long war they've had with guerrilla war...
The FARC.
So basically they're anti-government guerrilla war that's trying to overthrow the government, and they were spread throughout the jungle, and that's where they launched their attacks from, and just bloody wars. Attacks, bombings, and the street people killed. It's nasty. And anyway, in recent years, the Colombian government's defeated them. They've gotten them dwindled. Their numbers are so they're at a point where they could crush them. They could end this, give the final blow, and just knock the FARC off. But instead of that, they took this novel idea of hiring this advertising agency, and right, instead of bullets and bombs, they're going to say, you can come back home. Because the thing they discovered was they found a lot of ex-FARC members, and a lot of them said, like, they felt pretty, like, the oppression and prison that they thought they were fighting and the reason they joined the cause, they are now a prisoner to that same cause. And like years in, they didn't really know why they were doing what they were doing, why they were making these attacks and killing people. And so now they're, like, they're trapped. So it was beautiful. They launched all these advertising campaigns with the help of the army. But the problem is they're in the jungle. They're spread throughout the jungle. You don't know where they are. There's no headquarters. So some of the things they were doing was they had the special forces go in by helicopter. You know, did the infiltration, but they're not setting up traps or they don't have guns ablazing. They put up Christmas lights in a sign with motion sensors. And as the gorillas walk past and activate the motion sensor, the trees would light up. And the sign would say, if Christmas can come to the jungle, you can come back home.
Aww.
And another one, it gets better and better. These mothers who've been waiting for their sons who went and joined them for like 20, 25 years, they gave the army pictures of their children that only they would know. And then they hung up like across all the trees, all the signs saying, before you were a soldier, you were my child.
Oh.
And it's a picture of the mother with the kid. And then the most beautiful one was them from the helicopter in the juxtaposition of the images you're used to seeing. Where you see this guy in army fatigues who'd be like shooting bullets or dropping bombs. They're dropping because soccer is the biggest sport. So football, soccer balls, signed by the national sports players and the teams saying, come home, and then dropping them in the forest. And then the best one, this one hit me the most, was that their highways, because they're in the jungle, their highways are the rivers. So they traverse through the jungles, through the rivers. They had civilians, army members, ex-FARC members, like all these civilians, write these just messages and poems to all these people that were still in the jungle. And they put them in these balls that would glow at night. They turned bright blue. And thousands of them were just sent down the river. So at nighttime, you just see this convoy of glowing blue balls with messages of love. And come back home, we will take you back.
Like without that last thing done? Like,
they
get that last thing back. Like,
oh no! Yeah, no, no, like,
that's,
no,
no that's
yeah. Without arresting,
yeah,
like,
no,
you can come home. You can. There's a place for you. We will take you back, and it ended the war. Like it demobilized them, and they came in droves, and disarmed in truckloads with hugs and just. And it was like, if you haven't seen it, you see it, because like, you see the army, like, it's actually the army doing this, and it's not bullets and bombs, it's like their weapon is love, and caring, and message of welcome, and it worked.
It's beautiful.
And like the whole world could take a lesson from it.
Yeah.
So now we just get
Thank
the army to be armed.
Yeah.
As well.
I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's beautiful.
Questions or stories you'd like to share?
Really good books to recommend about this?
Books to recommend. Specifically about what I talked about, my future book.
Yeah.
But there's so many things that I take a lot of inspiration from, like The Good Life Project, Jonathan Fields' work, and that show is incredible. I love... Robin Sharma has a really good book around leadership, and The Leader Who Had No Title, that's a really great one. The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari is another good one, yeah. But the other one, the leadership-specific one, is The Leader Who Had No Title, which I really resonate strongly with in terms of a space of leadership. Brendan Burchard's work, I adore so much, and it touches on a lot of the same concepts. But I study a lot of different things, so I could recommend like shamanic books and resources and energy-related things and psychology-related things, and I probably should have a list of recommended books on my website if my website existed. Yeah.
Brandon Burchard.
Brandon Burchard. Yeah. He has done something called the Motivation Manifesto, Life's Golden Ticket. He's got a podcast, which is really great. Yeah, there's incredible... I have a very, very broad library across many different subjects, and for me, it's like, I just pull them all together in a way, but I'm finding that most of the books that I read are just sharing what I've really just figured out, right? And someone else is saying the same thing. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's not just me. Thank God.
I love
I'm not crazy.
Tuesday nights, Marianne Williamson. Of Course in Miracles.
Oh, Of Course in Miracles, yeah.
She gives a live webinar from New York City. Every Tuesday night, it's free. And she gets into the heart of leadership in politics with love. Yeah, no.
I should listen to that.
Yeah, I know. I'm missing it tonight.
I should interview her.
Yeah. Can I get up in the conversation? I love her. Marianne Williamson.
Yeah.
Just Facebook message me in the group and I'll get you. Yeah.
Okay.
And she did very... You guys are like kindred spirits. Yeah.
But I have to do the... had to do the work.
Yeah.
Because I found that for me, like, a lot of these things resonated for me, but I couldn't connect into it. And I knew that I loved people, and I knew I cared and respected people a lot, and I knew that I was leading differently than other people in my organization. But until I did my inner work, I couldn't really embody this in the way that I know that I'm intended to, right? So there's no way I could speak on stage about love in front of hundreds or a thousand people unless I've done my healing, because I know some people are going to be like, that's stupid, right? How do you receive that if you don't really love yourself first? Right, so I love that you're sharing, you know, your experience with leadership and what's resonating for you and what's not, because I can relate very much with that in my own past. It's very similar to what I've experienced in the past. So I would suggest that if leadership really resonates for you, to follow your own journey and don't listen to the other stupid stuff that's going on. Just show up and love those people and love them from a space of they don't know any better yet. Right, and that's all it is.
It's tough though, because like my manager, now that I'm in the management program, I guess they're more open to talking. Because I'm part of a union, so management can't talk to unions. But now that I'm in this program, now they can talk. And so my manager came up to me and said, "What do you think about the team?" And I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" He's like, "Well, do you feel like it's a team?" And I'm like, "No, like I've done like seven different internships, I think. So I've been part of different teams, and like this isn't a team. Like we're just individuals showing up." Sometimes we're talking to each other, other times we're not. When you come to a team meeting, people are like putting their backs up, they're stopping each other, and it's like, but why? Like, for what? And he's like, yeah, I don't know how to fix it. I noticed that too. And people have been coming to me individually complaining about the same thing. So it's like, everybody's aware of it, but, you know, and we're trying, like, everybody's trying their own way to bridge the gap, but then, like, things aren't changing, and it always comes back to, like, covering your own ass and trying to protect yourself, but for what? Like, I just don't understand that perspective. I'm like, for what? Like, we're not competing with each other.
Yeah. But people don't feel safe, right? Their safety, like, feeling unsafe, those things are being triggered for whatever reason. And that needs to... I can help with that if you want to and look... I can give you a business card and see if they want to bring someone in to help with that. That's my specialty.
That's interesting. I felt that feeling of, like, being in a team.
Great.
And me personally not feeling safe. That
I had no idea what
someone
I was
in the team, especially other people in the same team,
could have the same
role as me, then I feel like I might be if I help too much, then that the other person could take on my role, or like I could lose my position or my role.
Now we got to deal with letting go of roles and identities.
Yeah,
that's powerful work too.
Yeah. I found that very difficult, especially in, like I said, creative projects. And where the creative and the business were sort of mixed together, and I was working with other people, and I can't say this to others because I felt it personally. I felt that I was sort of afraid of, like, I don't know, of maybe sharing some information.
Yeah.
or not, because I felt that if there was a, because there weren't maybe like specific goals assigned, that I felt that then maybe another person could take charge and then like sort of overpower me at the end.
Right.
And
so,
then in the long term, then it would lead to maybe like that person, like that I'm going to make way less money than the other person.
Yeah.
So it's something that I've never sort of, it's sort of like I was aware of that as it was happening, but I couldn't sort of let go of that,
yeah,
of that fear, because I was also, oh, but I'm not sure if I can trust that the other team members that they're not gonna like jump up.
There's a whole
yeah.
lot of stuff I can
yeah,
say about
yeah.
that, but like not feeling safe, right?
Yeah.
And not trusting people, not having faith in things that are going on that should be going on. But a lot of it also comes down to fear of letting go of a role or a title or some sort of power, because that gives us this feeling of safety to have control over something,
yeah.
right? Which I'm very familiar with. So I've done a lot of work on that, to let go of having my value invested in my job title or what I'm responsible for. So the question that would come up is, who am I without that? Who am I if I don't have a title?
Right.
Who am I if I don't have a clear list of responsibilities that are mine and only mine?
Yeah.
Who can I be without those things? And to find safety and comfort in that openness takes some work. It took me a lot of work. Again, it's always possible to take the leap, but it depends on what's internal inside of you to be cleared first. Working through letting... That's actually this week's lesson for people from my program is letting go of roles, stepping into play and curiosity, and authenticity. So, yeah.
I'd be really interested to see how you work with organizations, just because like everything you're saying right now, God forbid you said let go of your role, because that's everything. To,
but I can't.
Child.
So,
I'm
yeah,
a band
sure.
Child. You're the beginner. I'm a band child,
yeah.
Right?
So,
like,
I can't do that.
Right?
I can't jump straight to that point. I have to do the other work with them first, right? To get rid of all of their blocks, all of their stories, all of their worries. You know, not can't get all of them, but the main ones and their fears and what might happen. Shift out of their limiting beliefs. Shift their perspective on the stories that they're telling. You know, and to create that safe container for them first. Then we can talk about letting go of roles and who are you. Yeah, it's a process. So these are things that I've done that I didn't know I was doing until I had to start spelling it out for people. Yeah.
I'm held out to say that, you know, there's no point of digging up your past. Like, just think about the future and not dig up your past. It's like,
I lived like that for a long time. Yeah, just focus on the future and create new, you know, experiences.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. For some people that might work, but I think for the majority, you can't do that. Because that's still in you. Right? It's possible to take a leap, but you have to create a clean slate when you take that leap. You have to jump into, it's a new world, it's a new life, I'm a new person, and I don't have any of that old stuff. And that's a really big leap to make. And it's possible. I know of a few people who have done it very, very cleanly and quickly. Not many. And I don't know if it's going to hold. They might be fooling themselves. I think for the most part, for most of us, we're human beings. We have the human stuff happening. And we have to do the work to clear, to make a clean slate. And honestly, there's still going to be stuff that holds us, but the more that we clean out, the more we can just attach into that vision and our intentions for what we want to create and actually hold that vibration or hold that space. So it's hard to hold it if we keep getting triggered and keep trying to convince ourselves that we're not getting triggered.
A garden grows weeds really quickly. If you ever plant it, you know that you've got to get those weeds out all the time, because as soon as they're clear, 3 months later, it's like, what?
You got to get the roots, the deep, deep roots.
Yeah.
So you can support that through many, many things. Like, it doesn't have to be just with therapy. It doesn't have to be intensive. For me, it's been intensive, almost self-therapy or therapy with friends. But I use a lot of other techniques to support that, to release things from my body with massage or support like that, saunas. So ways to detox stuff out of my system. Also doing energy work with people. So having them to energetically shift. I've had soul retrievals also, which is in, I was like, soul retrievals? I don't know that that really exists. Whatever. But I'll try it. And having profound experiences that I can't explain other than that that is exactly what had happened because of what came up for me. Those are avenues that I use, some of them. The cleaner your system is in your body, the easier it's going to be to shift into that space. But then you have to do the work to clear out your emotions, clear out your mental thought process blocks, and then you can really step into that new clean slate space. Yeah. I was really very, very good at just holding the future and just living that awesome life, and really, I thought I was happy. I did. And then my past came around and bit me from behind. I thought it was good. No. I ran so far in the other direction that I ran around, it's like running around the globe and then running back into myself.
Did you do it for self-help, or did you have to take a psychologist or some other counseling?
I did a lot of self-help. I did some therapy work, but predominantly I find that I do better self-therapy because of my studies in a variety of fields. And I do better support with people that I know and I trust because of my trauma. I really had a very hard time trusting therapists to really go to where I needed to go because of other things in my life. So that was my avenue. So I think really the best is to figure out what feels best for you and to trust that feeling and to follow that path. And it's usually going to be a mixture of things.
I just realized this probably falls into what you're talking about in terms of loving even your adversaries, loving even the people who really harmed you. Like, I used to, like, you know, with the heart, the time I had, like, my heart just ripped apart. Like, my first reaction was, like, never again. I'm going to see all the warning signs again, and I'm going to know better, and I'm not going to let that happen again. But it's true, like, until you resolve it, like, you're just, it's going to keep repeating itself, because you haven't actually addressed it. And I think the biggest thing I've taken is that I cherish all the garbage and baggage and shit. Like, all the stuff that was the crappiest stuff to go through, the darkest times of my... all the stuff I said, I never want to go through that again. In retrospect, I wouldn't trade them for the world. Because all those moments shaped me, and they made me stronger, and I learned from them. And as a result, when I encounter similar situations again, I'm better equipped to deal with them.
Yeah.
On a more stable...
What your trigger, in a great way, is this is the root of compassion.
Yes.
When we really acknowledge that deep work that we've done, and we know how hard it is, and we've triumphed over it, right? And we've moved on and left it in the past. I mean, then you know you've left it in the past. Then when you come across someone else who is in that same position you were, you recognize it. You have compassion because you know how hard it was for you.
Yeah.
You can recognize it in someone else now. And then that is a beautiful thing. Like you said, it's that rich a thing. Like, how do you recognize this in other people if you're coasting and you're not feeling and you don't have any awareness?
Mm-hmm.
You don't. You're just projecting.
Almost all the defining moments of my life are quote-unquote failures. The successes, I mean, they were nice and yes, that there's happiness and pride, but the ones that I feel like truly define me and who I became and what I learned and just how much stronger I became was those just really shitty times, like the ones that just tear your heart out and you're like, this sucks. And
Can
we go around and tell a shitty thing?
Like, yeah, sure, you can do whatever you want.
Can we share the shitty? Okay, let's share the shitty.
I don't want to miss this, but I gotta go.
Oh, okay, we'll wait. Okay, so we can go around and we'll share the shitty, right? Because, like, we're on an intimate level here, I think, right? Like, she's opened up some great stuff. Because it will show, I think it'll help us bridge as well, like, where we've all come from, right? To acknowledge where we're going, where we are right now, where we're going, right?
I'd love to. I'm
I know, gonna wait.
I'll
try to get water. But no, I love what you said, because it's so true, right?
Yeah, I even try to stay conscious of it now. Like, if I find myself in a moment that I'm, like, shot, like, that I'm scared of, and I'm like, this is painful, this is dark, this is uncomfortable. The most common is when I failed at trading. When I was like, here's another path I went down. And each time I went there, finance, actuarial science, day trading. Each time, it was almost the same as the relationship. I'm learning from the mistakes of the last one. I'm going to get it right this time. This one's going to be the one. And I fixed all the mistakes from that last one. I've learned, and this is going to be the one. And it happened again. And it's such...
lines.
In the end, it was a similar mistake. It was basically always like, this is somewhat kind of what I'm interested in, but the money and the title. There's money and it's impressive. And that was the same mistake I kept making every single time. It was just different forms. But the darkness, like, I don't regret going down each path at all. I don't regret, like, I'm proud that I took the plunge and I tried. And I learned. Like, I know more about myself. I learned that lesson by going through this just shitty cycle again. I'm at square one again. I gotta figure this all out again. I gotta think of a new path, a new purpose. I gotta find it all again. And when I'm in that moment, I now, like, I actually catch myself going, no, this is going to be good for you. You can't see it now. It's too hard to see it now just because of how much of an emotional wreck you are. But you know, as enough time passes, this is going to be one of your better moments. This is going to be a moment that you look back and thank God that happened. Because if it didn't happen, I'd still be making that same mistake. Okay, so shit. I'll start.
Wait,
off.
Did everyone say their shit already?
No,
we're
waiting for you to come
no,
out.
We're waiting for you.
So I'd say the first dark moment was, so all throughout school, elementary school, high school, I was a perfectionist, straight perfectionist, and also what I prided myself on not excelling just in academics, but everything. So captain of the basketball team. Friends with every single different social group, popular with girls, beautiful girlfriend, could play the piano, was the best, could beat all my friends at pool, basketball, this and that. Like, and that's what I was achieving, that's what I was striving for. And it was this, like, this ideal, an identity that I then attached myself to. And I even survived first year university. Everyone said, oh, and when you get to university, your grades are going to drop. I'm like, screw that, I'm still going to get 90s. And I did that. I was able to do it my first year. And then it was second year when I was like, all right, it finally, something has to give. And I couldn't do it anymore. Like, I was all honors levels courses, and there wasn't enough time to have that level of perfection. And all of a sudden, my world started crumbling because my grades started dropping. I was stressed out. I wasn't sleeping. I was trying to schedule out every single minute of the day. And I broke down. I had an absolute emotional
Sorry,
crisis
we had to keep the door open because of the
this identity I had attached to myself and where my what my value was for all these years.
Yeah,
all of a sudden I couldn't do anymore. And now I'm thinking, holy crap, I can't even do my work because I'm having this panic attack. I'm crawling up in my bed and I can't get out.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to go talk to a therapist right now. And then all of this just shit, like scenarios start playing out. Like, oh my god, I was always at the top of the class. Now I'm going to like have to take some time off. Like, if I take some time off, my classmates are going ahead of me. And how are they going to think of me? What are they going to look at me? Who am I now that I'm not this guy anymore that I've been building myself up to be? And it sucked. Like, that was the scariest. I had to leave school. I had to take just a leave of absence, take a semester off. And all my colleagues and classmates who, you know, I built up this image in my head. They all put me up here. They all thought of me up here. And now what do they think of me? They must think I'm down here. And I shelled up. And it was one of the hardest things I'd ever had to go through. And I felt like I was depressed. I felt scared. I felt like I was in this hole. I actually said this to the therapist I was talking to. I was in this hole that just kept caving in. And it kept going lower and lower. And then looking back, I wouldn't trade that time for anything. If that didn't happen to me, I'd still be that perfectionist today. And I'd still be living up to that ideal in this unrealistic expectation. And also just this bullshit narrative that one, people are even looking at you that way, and two, that it even, like, it matters. It was all in my head. It was all just figments of my own imagination. And
we are incredible story creators.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We create incredible stories that aren't even real.
Yeah.
About reality. Yeah.
So, yeah, that was one of the, yeah, at the time, because it was the first time I'd say up to that point in my life. I was 21. I never experienced any real failure, and that was a point of pride. I was like, I didn't fail at anything. I succeeded at anything. I went out. If I wanted it, I went and I got it. And that's not healthy. To go through life thinking you're not going to fail, and that failure is a bad thing to avoid at all costs.
Mm-hmm. Familiar with that narrative.
Yeah, not healthy. So.
No failure, no feeling.
That's some shit that I cherish, I think.
That's awesome shit.
I would really love to hear everyone's stories. I have to drive back to Paris, though, and I don't know how long that's going to take tonight, so I need to go. Respecting myself enough to get home safely and get a good night's sleep before I need to get up at 5:30. So,
thanks, Selena.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, you're welcome. I hope that everyone found something of value.
Mm-hmm.